You are listening to Heat Rocks. I'm Oliver Wong.
And I'm Ernest Hardy, sitting in for Morgan Rhodes.
Every episode, we invite a guest to join us to talk about a heat rock. You know, 300 degrees of musical goodness. And today, we are blessed to be talking about the 1977 hit album by The Emotions, Rejoice. Say this much about the Hutchinson sisters. As a trio known as The Emotions, they got to enjoy a second act that eluded many of their peers. First signed to the Memphis powerhouse label of Stax Volt in the late 60s, the group, then working with Isaac Hayes, released a pair of memorable, if not chart-topping, albums in that era. But when Stax and Volt folded in the mid-70s, it could have left The Emotions permanently stranded, like what happened to many of their label mates. But their Chicago roots meant that they still had friends from back home, including the great undersung producer-arranger at Chess Records, Charles Stepney, as well as one Maurice White, who of course had left Chicago for Los Angeles to form the mighty Earth, Wind & Fire. The Emotions now had a second lease on professional life, and with Rejoice, they went platinum with their first and only number one album, which also yielded their first and only number one chart-crossing hit, Best of My Love, Whoa, Whoa.
Rejoice was the album pick of our guest today, Tisa Bryant. This week's introduction was a tough one to pull together because this week's guest is not only a very dear friend of mine, but someone with whom I collaborate often. Trying to figure out where to even begin listing her accomplishments and gifts was daunting. Tisa Bryant is an artist, a scholar, an educator, an archivist, and a pretty fucking fantastic human being. I think the best way to enter the multimedia, multidiscipline world she builds and inhabits is through her groundbreaking book, Unexplained Presence, from 2007, in which she takes a nuanced, poetic look at Black figures who are in the background or on the periphery of celebrated works of visual art, literature, and cinema to ask, why are they there at all? What purpose do they in their small brushstroke Blackness serve in these imagined worlds in which whiteness is the center and seemingly uncontested norm, both earth and sky? In what ways might they force us to reconsider that so-called norm? Unexplained Presence was at the front end of many conversations now being held about Blackness and cultural production by non-Blacks who use Blackness as an accent, in every sense of that word. Working with her on our multimedia project, The Black Book, in which we use film, literature, music, video, and elements scavenged from the internet to explore various themes and issues related to Black life, mental health, what it means to travel while Black, gentrification, and Black love, and the endless hour of chaos, I'm constantly blown away by her encyclopedic knowledge across discipline and genre, and by the generosity with which she shares her knowledge and gifts. Currently a professor at CalArts, where she teaches the courses in experimental writing, Tisa Bryant is a formidable presence. Tisa, welcome to Heat Rocks.
Thank you. That was amazing.
Why The Emotions and why this album in particular?
I don't know.
Good answer.
It's probably the sweetest and most emotionally enriching album I can think of. Mm. It's unfreighted. Mm-hmm. You know, there were so many other albums I could think of that had a kind of weight to my life or something happening. And this album isn't marked for me by anything but joy and possibility and aspiration, because those voices, you know, as a kid, you know, who wouldn't want to sing one of those parts as well.
Was this your album, your introduction to The Emotions? And if so, how did you actually, were you introduced to it?
I think this was it. You know, The Emotions, it's one of those things where I wondered if I had been hearing them before I knew it. Hmm. But definitely, you know, the hit single from this album, Best of My Love, you know, was why I bought the album.
I would be willing to bet you almost anything you had heard them many times, because it wasn't until I was an adult and sort of started digging through back people's like catalogs that I realized so many of their songs from the late 60s I actually knew, you know. But the sound is very different. And so connecting the sound, their sound from the 60s to their sound with Maurice White, it's like, oh. And once you realize that it's the same group. You do hear that it, you know, you hear it, but it took a moment to sort of go, oh, I know them. I know these voices.
That's exactly right. You know, when I saw Watt Stacks and heard them singing Peace Be Still, and I was like, oh, I already know them.
Right.
The sky is overshadowed with blackness. Oh, your sin is no more. No hand is nigh.
Ernest, how about you? What was your intro to the Emotions? Or when did you first start really making those connections between the sound and the artist?
Like I said, it wasn't until I was an adult and sort of like studying these things as opposed to just sort of like being a passive, not quite passive listener as a kid. For me, I think it was Flowers.
God is watching you, he's watching you. Woo! Think it over. Oh, oh, oh. Ooh. Like being a
phony clover. No.
Think it over.
Oliver mentioned in his intro that this was their first number one album, and Best of My Love was their first pop number one crossover hit. But in the black community, they were, you know, Flowers and so many others,
right,
you know, before that. So, yeah, they were a well-known item.
Right. A known entity.
Known entity.
Yeah.
That's it.
But it was kind of like a back formation for me to kind of go back to Flowers after Rejoice came out.
Mm.
You know, that was my introduction to them. And then kind of working backwards over the years, like, oh, these are the other songs, especially Flowers. That album had a couple of hits from it that were very popular.
Tisa, where would you put them in the ranking of girl groups? Because, you know,
big question.
There are always conversations about the girl groups, the great girl groups. And we have everyone from the Supremes to the Ronettes to En Vogue. But the Emotions seem to sort of not really be mentioned when those conversations arise. And so I won't ask you to actually rank them, but just like to put them in conversation with other girl groups and sort of evaluate, you know, like their, like what they contribute to that figure, the girl group.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about that because it's so huge, and thinking about the girl groups, thinking about the call and response that girl groups are known for in the doo-wop, the shoop-shoop, you know, the kinds of things, and moving from that to where the Emotions gets us. But I was thinking about the Jones Girls and the Emotions. For me, they're tied.
Mm.
Les Nubians as a different kind of girl group. Mm. Destiny's Child, of course. I mean, there's so many girl groups. But, you know, I think the Emotions are a bit unsung, and that was something I was looking for. It's like, is there an unsung for Emotions? You know, because I really want to dig into who they are, but they've been so sampled.
Right.
Their harmonizing, to me, is unparalleled, I guess, save for the Jones Girls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something that they're able to do that makes my heart kind of rise and open that doesn't happen in the same way with some of the other girl groups.
But I was going to say, to your point, I think there is not the same kind of mythology that we have around them in the same way that we apply to, let's say, the Supremes or to Destiny's Child. And I think in some ways, and I don't want to overstep or overreach with this, partly it's because those groups had drama associated with it, and that's part of the mythology. Whereas even though the Emotions change singers at different points in their career, we just don't associate them with something that is sort of gossip worthy, and therefore it doesn't merit the same kind of attention. I think maybe that's partially to explain, because from a, you know, if we're just looking at hit making, it's hard to deny the influence and the importance of the Emotions. But again, they don't linger with us in the same way that we think about Diana Ross and the Supremes or Beyonce and Destiny's Child or whoever.
Or the Ronettes, because the Phil Spector.
Yes.
Right.
There's
right.
So much there. You know, I was thinking about this prepping for this show, and I was thinking about the Emotions along with the Pointer Sisters, who also
yes,
another like phenomenal girl group. I almost hate using that term when you were speaking about women who are such women.
Right. Or LaBelle. You know,
LaBelle,
just like
wouldn't think
of them as a girl group in
exactly,
that way.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But what I was thinking, I have a friend who lives in New York, and we talk about music all the time, and he's the same age we are. And one of the things we say is, growing up as children in the 70s and listening to all this music, there are these artists who are like the A-list, the B-list, the C-list, and the D-list. But C and D-list had nothing to do with talent. It's just that there was such a wealth of, you know, extraordinary music being made and such a wealth of talent that necessarily, like, someone who was extraordinary was sort of bumped down to the B-list because someone else had, you know, so much space and so on and so forth. And I think with the Emotions and the Pointer Sisters, you know, having sort of hitting their stride in the mid to late 70s, there's just like this glut and embarrassment of riches. And what happens is, you know, certain names, often, you know, associated more with drama or gossip-worthy things, those names sort of rise to the fore. And it's not necessarily to do with a level of talent. It's just all these variables that don't really have anything to do with music sometimes.
Exactly. Right? And it's funny, right? Because for the Emotions, you know, the height of drama was like, where's Jeanette? You know, where did Jeanette go?
Right,
for the Pointer Sisters, Bonnie going solo was, you know, the big deal, and it became, you know, newsworthy. I've just been really thinking a lot about girl groups and sisterhood and shared experience on the one hand, and then a kind of specific individuality that they managed to arrive at.
Coming back to this album in particular, one of the things I was struck by in looking through especially just the personnel on it and thinking about a little bit of the backstory is it's such a Los Angeles record in a lot of ways. And even though, you know, Maurice wasn't from L.A. originally, even though the Emotions are much more tied to Chicago and Memphis than Los Angeles, but yet I think L.A. of this era, because of the existence of the music industry and all the ways in which you have this big flow of communities moving out to L.A. in the post-war era, you know, everyone who's playing on this are primarily transplants. But it, as a result of that, it has this very only in L.A. feel to it. So not only do you have Maurice White producing it, but of course it's got players from Earth, Wind & Fire, as well as a lot of the original rhythm section to the Watts 103rd Street Rhythm Band, all of whom had been transplants to LA from the 1960s. And so, you know, as a homer for the city, I just love that constellation of talents that are able to meet and generate something that, again, I don't think we think of this album as being a particularly LA album, but when you kind of dig beneath the surface, it is something that it embodies something about where LA, how LA had become the center of black music, I think, by the 1970s, if not sooner than that.
You know, another thing I think that makes her work with Maurice White and Earth, Wind & Fire like so radiant is that the collaboration exists in that place where religion and spirituality are one.
Yes.
Right? Because the Emotions came from a classic gospel background. And while we can hear the artistic training that provided them in those amazing, flawless harmonies, they were also true believers in Christ and his love and mercy. And that was the engine in their artistry, right? Well, at the same time, Maurice White and Earth, Wind & Fire were sort of like these missionaries for a spirituality that transcended all racial, cultural, geographic boundaries. You know, you bring those two factors together, right, and you just have like magic.
Yeah, and I kind of love that too, because what Earth, Wind & Fire, what Maurice White and Earth, Wind & Fire were doing was a very kind of Africanized spirituality in a lot of ways as well.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about this, like what it was about that meeting that made the spirit and the message of the Emotions so palatable. We didn't grow up going to church. You know, I don't have pastors in my background or any of that. And this music and Earth, Wind & Fire, it just spoke to me on a level that wasn't punishing. There's nothing connected to it that was about, like, you know, my salvation, you know, or sin or those kinds of things. Whereas, you know, there are other gospel groups that kind of had crossover hits, but are, you know, like BB and CC Winans, for example, that song Heaven from the 80s is, you know, it's a great song, but it's very explicitly, you know, about the rules that you must follow to be let into the kingdom. It's what I live. Place where love will never cease, willing to die for, yeah. Heaven is where I will never be. And, you know, Emotions can impart those kinds of lessons without the same scaffolding, you know, mm-hmm. definitely about how to be honest, how to speak the truth of your heart,
right.
how to manage your relationships with people or with yourself. A song like Blessed, it is overtly religious in a lot of ways, but then it's...
But it's not heavy-handed.
Exactly.
Right. You know? Right.
Exactly.
My soul feels good about the ties I bind. Me and him, we're all mankind together. My soul feels good about the ties I bind. Me and him, we're all mankind together.
And I think a lot... even a song like Best of My Love, it would not be difficult to imagine that being covered or redone in a gospel context with just very minor... you wouldn't even need to necessarily tweak it. Like, you can... easily hear how it could be turned from just a generic radio dance love song to something that is about, you know, singing love to Christ or singing love mm-hmm. to religion or those things. So I think it allows it a lot of these songs to go those both ways without it, as you're pointing out, being so ham-fisted about it as you might hear in other cases.
I think another thing about a lot of the black music of this era, especially, you know, as you were saying, Denise Williams, Earth, Wind, and Fire, The Emotions, of course, is that this is a period, right, where for a lot of folks, we could still hold on to the belief or hope that the civil rights struggles of the past several decades was going to actually blossom into something real for black people, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So there's like still that element of hope in the air, and it's before crack and AIDS and, mm-hmm. and those things like sort of just like sort of just drained so much and presented different textures and aesthetics in the music and in black life.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, this music is really a time capsule of a time of hope and possibility. And you hear that in their voices. You hear it in the songwriting. You hear it just across the board.
Yeah. And also to Oliver's point about L.A., we could listen to it as recuperative and Flowers as well for 1976.
Mm.
Just 10 years after Watts' Rebellion,
yeah.
you know, the kind of continued influx of musicians and artists to L.A., to try to rebuild and rehabilitate
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
black life, cultural production, you know, in the aftermath of that moment as well, which was, you know, that moment was happening all over the country.
Right,
you know,
right,
there were
right.
lots of rebellions, a lot of neighborhoods lost to fires and violence. And so there is also something quite special about Earth, Wind, and Fire, and Rotary Connection as well. Like there's a lot of the kind of, I think a lot about this too, the kind of choral richness of the productions of the albums that Charles Stepney worked on. There's a lot happening through him that really shifted once he passed away.
Right. One more thing I just wanted to add, in particular, bringing this back to White, and in the second half, we'll certainly get back to the emotions of the album, but it is staggering how busy he was in this era and how he had his hands. I mean, obviously he's still producing the Earth, Wind, and Fire work. And this comes out, you know, a year, maybe less than that, after he puts out That's the Way of the World. He's working on Denise Williams's first and sophomore album. And unfortunately, because Stepney passed away around the same time, all the work fell to Maurice to have to kind of take it up. And then he's also co-producing Flowers, and then fully produces this album. And so it's just, you just think about the magnitude of his talent. It's not like Maurice White is remotely slept on in that regard, but how much he had to juggle here and how adept he was at doing it and producing all of these different artists in addition to his own group is really, really a marvel in terms of just the level of genius that he was bringing.
When you listen to the work that he was doing, you listen to Earth, Wind, and Fire, Denise Williams, The Emotions, there is, you know, there's similarity just in terms of, as we were saying, the optimism or the uplift. And yet, he really leaves space for his group and for The Emotions and for Denise Williams to carve their own identities and their own sound and their own space, you know, within what he was bringing to the table.
Absolutely. Because those later albums of The Emotions from the 80s, They sound very different. And maybe, you know, Rejoice is just a specific kind of album because of how orchestrated it is. Mm. I mean, there's like six violas, three violins.
She counted.
I did. You know, and the other albums on either side of it don't have that approach at all. And I also want to make sure we talk about Paulinho da Costa and percussion. I mean,
go in.
All I have to say is, as a kid reading liner notes, his was a name that came up often for R&B albums. You know, Brazilian percussionist who from Rio who moved to L.A. He worked with Quincy Jones, who produced lots of things. Like, his name, he's probably like the first Brazilian I actually, without knowing he was this Brazilian percussionist. You know, you just kind of keep threading together. This guy is popping up all over the place and providing... Like his the range of percussive instruments he can play alone, there's like 40 of them. And so the kind of what I was saying earlier about a very perhaps diasporic, if not African, bottom that Earth, Wind and Fire imparts to Maurice White imparts to the albums that he produced, and Charles Stepney as well. There's something that, you know, for another show to really dig into in terms of how an African sound can come through, even with all of these strings and this other kind of perhaps more Western Christian approach to a gospelized sound. Mm-hmm. There's a real percussive bottom to the music that I keep thinking about Paulinho in particular, but Maurice White as well, kind of taking that and making it a signature of the sound.
It's funny because I just heard you describe it, I can hear like the congas and everything there. But I love Blessed, and I think what always struck me about the percussion was really more in terms of how deep in the pocket James Gadson is on this, because it has that thump, which sounds a lot like some of the Barry White productions from that time, which is one reason why this stuff was sampled so heavily by you know, later hip hop artists, is because it just had that oomph to it. But you take away the Brazilian or the Afro-Caribbean influences, and the song is very different. I think it's the subtlety of it really helps make it work in a way that I just don't think I appreciate until listening to it just now.
And I'm glad you brought up Barry White, because if anything, going back to the girl groups and how we think about them, what I saw on the online YouTube chatter in the comments was really this battle that never occurred to me between the emotions and Love's Unlimited Orchestra. Love Unlimited. I just, you know, someone was saying, well, you know, Glodine could never sing as well as, and I was like, it's come to, I did not know that it had ever even come to that at all. Like, they, to me, occupied their spaces. But for certain generations of people or certain kinds of listeners, you know, they need a battle.
You're the key to my heart. You're the key.
We'll be back with more of our conversation with Tisa Bryant about the emotions Rejoice after a brief word from a couple of Max Fun podcasts. Keep it locked.
We are so thrilled at your interest in attending Hieronymus Wiggenstaff's School for Heroism and Villainy. Wiggenstaff's beautiful campus boasts state-of-the-art facilities and instructors with real-world experience. We are also proud to say that our alumni have gone on to be professional heroes and villains in the most renowned kingdoms in the world. But of course, you are not applying to the main school, are you? You're applying for our sidekick and henchperson annex. You will still benefit from the school's amazing campus, and you'll have a lifetime of steady employment. Of course, there's no guarantee how long that lifetime will be.
Join the McElroys as they return to Dungeons & Dragons with The Adventure Zone Graduation, every other Thursday on Maximum Fun, or wherever podcasts are found.
Hello there, ghouls and gals. It is I, April Wolf. I'm here to take you through the twisty, scary, heart-pounding world of genre cinema on the exhilarating program known as Switchblade Sisters. The concept is simple. I invite a female filmmaker on each week, and we discuss their favorite genre film. Listen in closely to hear past guests like The Babadook director, Jennifer Kent, Winter's Bone director, Deborah Granick, and so many others every Thursday on MaximumFun.org. Tune in if you dare.
It's actually a very thought-provoking show that deeply explores the craft and philosophy behind the filmmaking process while also examining film through the lens of the female gaze. So, like, you should listen.
Switchblade Sisters.
We are back here on Heat Rocks talking about Rejoice, the 1977 album by The Emotions, with our guest, Tisa Bryant. What is the fire track off this album for you?
Oh.
And is it not Best of My Love? Like, how can it not be Best of My Love?
It's not Best of My Love.
Oh, I love this. All right. What is it?
Yeah. I knew this question was going to come, and I thought I had the answer. And I'm torn between How'd I Know That Love Would Slip Away? Mm-hmm. And Rejoice. I also like Don't Ask My Neighbors. So I think so many songs besides Best of My Love, they're all so strong.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of fire on this album for me. So I was appalled to read that Robert Christgau said that this album was lazy and he gave it a C+. And, you know, that it was just pretty voices relying on being pretty. And I was just like, there's so much work happening on this album that there's no laziness to me.
Right.
And the Best of My Love was, you know, the danceable, you know, single, and that made sense.
Yeah.
But the quieter songs are the ones that get me.
Friends only guess. They can't say really.
Well, let me come back to this, since you have multiple choices here, right? And not to make you kill your darling, kill your darlings, but if, let's say, imagine someone who's never heard this album before, or in fact, imagine someone who's never heard The Emotions before. What's the song off of this album that you would have them start with as a way to kind of get a sense of this is their essence, either whether it's for their album, for them as artists, whatever?
A feeling is?
A feeling is a thing you can't. Singular or plural, no matter what kind or mood of, you only know the real true meaning. You don't have to tell anybody what's keeping you in a way, whatever the day.
I love the way their voices just glide.
Mm.
And as an introduction to someone who had never listened to Emotions before, I think it kind of showcases their virtuosity. It's a simple song, but their vocals aren't simple. You know, the beats are pretty straightforward and solid. But the way their voices kind of
glide's a great word. It's a perfect word to use with what they're doing with their voices on this one. I mean, look, I will be the conventional person to just say that the fire track for me is Best of My Love because it's the first song that I ever heard off of this album. And it is just one of the singular best dance tracks of this era. I think I used to put it up against Cheryl Lynn's Got to Be Real. But the more I listened to The Emotions on this one, I think this one actually it kind of handily wins between two songs that have similar production styles. Mm. But part of it is it's the added element of having that chorus of voices here. Mm-hmm. And just the arrangement and the production is just so perfect. I was saying in the first half that listening to the song is, to me, it's just a distillation of joy in so many ways. And as a DJ, it's one of those things where if everything else is flagging, you just drop this in and it just does the work for you.
Never will I
And listening to it again just now, certainly the bass and percussion do a lot of the work, but let's not forget the relevance of the horns, which of course is something, if you're talking about Earth, Wind, and Fire, you got to talk about their horn section.
Yes.
And the ways in which they kind of just punctuate moments in it, I think, also adds to that. The song also yields my favorite moment, but before we get to that question, Ernest, so did you have a fire track?
Well, you know, like I said, I couldn't pick just one because everyone has like these moments that just, you're thinking, okay, this would be my pick. But what I was thinking when you asked what would be the track that you would play for someone, to introduce them to the emotions, for me, it would be Don't Ask My Neighbors.
Mm.
One, because it wasn't a huge pop hit, but it was a huge hit. I mean, it's like a staple in black radio,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But also because I think it's the track that most easily sort of tracks backward to their earlier work as well. So listening to this, you sort of get a sense of like who they were and the evolution of that approach to singing and the approach to songwriting and all of it. So I think that one sort of like there's so much embedded in it.
You think I'm changing? Ooh.
Sort of struck me that their enunciation is so crisp, and it made me, Nancy Wilson did a cover of Don't Ask My Neighbors, and it's really quite fantastic. And so, Nancy Wilson, like this jazz goddess legend, and it made me realize you can hear her influence on them, which is not necessarily something that you would immediately think of, but having her cover their record and put her twist down that you can sort of see the sort of cross-generational exchange that takes place.
You don't understand. You think I'm changing. Whoa. Don't ask my neighbor. Never ask the friends I hang around.
What's really wonderful about that song is there's a tenderness and a vulnerability, mm-hmm. right? And it's not only in their vocals, but it's also in what they are encouraging in a lover, right? Come to me, talk to me, ask me what you want to know. You're mm-hmm. safe with me,
mm-hmm.
and they're saying all these like really sort of reassuring, comforting things. But it's also really sexy,
and that's also something that's a bit different from the Stax Volt years to this, that there's a lot more expansiveness to that sensuality.
Right. And they're older, maybe it's reflecting part of their life experience. I was just going to add, too, I think that having those other voices, besides just the kind of sonic contrast that we're talking about here, it's also what separates something like this from, let's say, the work of Minnie Riperton in the same area, who has that angelic voice, but with that, the same kind of richness of the background singers. It just produces a different feel, I think, compared to some of what we hear on this album.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're also getting into my next question here, which is about if either of you have a favorite moment on the album. And for me, I still have to come back to Best of My Love. And originally, I thought it was at the opening part of it, which is when you have just the bass curl that goes from the horn intro into the main track. But when I think about the voices, it's actually later in the song, and I think it's probably the bridge where you have that same kind of breakdown, I think, with the horns, but then also the three women in unison going, ow, and then it kicks back into the main track. And I think that is just like, and when you hear the song enough times, you know it's coming, but it doesn't matter if you've heard the song three dozen times, like it always gets you right there.
In Don't Ask My Neighbors, that back, I don't know where it is in the song, but there's the way they fall back and down.
Don't ask my neighbors.
But then also that moment in Rejoice, there's so many every single song has something. Mm. I think that's what I love about listening to this album is the kind of surging moments and the moments of surprise and the moments of differentiation between the three sisters singing and what sisterhood sounds like.
How about you, Ernest?
I think for me, you know, we've discussed so much about the soaring voices and the blending and the harmonies. For me, it's the lead vocal on Don't Ask My Neighbors, because so often when we talk about singing, we sort of get hung up, and I'm not saying in this conversation, but when people talk about great singing, they talk about blasting the roof off. They talk about just like, you know, lungs.
Going big. Yeah.
And there's something about that lead vocal, you know, it's understated and yet very emotional. And there's a way in which, you know, before the backing vocals kick in, it's sort of sparse, you know. So there's an intimacy there. And there's so much shading of emotion and intellect and experience and all of that in this vocal performance. And it just really reminds you that the best singers, you know, might be able to just like shame any opera singer, right, in terms of volume, right? But there's something to be said for that understated, tender moment or performance as well.
I find the same in Long Way to Go. As a lead vocalist, she's amazing. That song does kind of open and explode in lots of ways, but it's also a kind of a hand extended out to community, you know, to kind of keep pushing.
This may or may not be a sacrilegious question to ask here, but is there a song off of here that you would like to hear a contemporary artist cover? If so, what is the song and who would the artist be?
You know what? I'm not going to pick a single track, but I would say I would love to hear Layla Hathaway do whatever she wanted to do off this album. You know, her voice is fantastic. And you know who else would be interesting would be Rochelle Farrell.
Yep. And now I'm forgetting her last name because I watched a little bit of 20 Feet from Stardom this morning because I kept thinking about it in relation to this album, even though they're not background singers per se.
Right.
But Lisa Pierce?
Oh my God. This is embarrassing.
It is.
Hold on. Fisher.
Lisa Fisher.
Don't get old, people.
Yes. Right. Yeah, she could have all of it. And I also would say, even though it might be kind of a reach, I'm really influenced by, I watched Esperanza Spalding create an album on Facebook Live over the course of like 24 hours or 48 hours or whatever it was. And she had Layla Hathaway come in. And I kind of wonder if those two collaborating on a cover of a track from this album could be interesting as well, because they were amazing what they did.
That would be amazing.
Yeah,
I think along those lines, one of the qualities about this album is that other albums are very much fixed in their moment. So trying to move it outside of the moment, time moment that they were recorded in sometimes doesn't really work very well. And we've talked about this in some of our previous shows. I don't feel that this album is weighted in the same way. I mean, maybe Best of My Love only because it's such a distinctive 70s hit. But, you know, something like Neighbors or Key to My Heart or Blessed, I could easily imagine someone tackling it today, and it wouldn't sound anachronistic to me. It wouldn't sound like someone deliberately trying to do a throwback song, which speaks a lot to just the quality of the songwriting, the quality of just the sound of it, is that, yeah, you could pluck a lot of this and put it in 2019 or 2020. And with the right singers, I like the collaborations, you know, we've invented here. I think it would totally work.
Yeah.
And there have been a lot of covers of emotion songs. I'm not recalling them off the top of my head now.
Oh, sure.
There were a number of covers of Don't Ask My Neighbors and one other track, and then tons of sampling. But there have been a number of covers, and I was curious about that because I've never heard any covers of any of the tracks on this album or of any emotion song, actually. So I'm
good opportunity.
In a bubble.
Yeah.
Like, will it hurt or will it be okay?
Well, one way to find out, I suppose, if someone intrepid listener out there wants to tackle that.
Yeah.
Tisa, if you had to describe Rejoice in three words, what three words would you choose?
Ooh. Sly.
Mm.
spiritual, sensual.
I like the alliteration with that as well. Very nice. We have a writer in the room. Several.
That was a sound of panic. Say something.
As always, we want to leave our listeners with a next listen on their playlist. So if you really liked Rejoice, this is what you might want to check out next. This is kind of a lazy choice, I suppose, but I really do love and ride for the Emotions earlier Stax Volt stuff. And handily, the folks have compiled their first two albums, So I Can Love You and Untouched, into a single anthology, which should be relatively easy to find. And I mean, it's just there's really great music on there. And I think it does provide, as we've been discussing today, really, I think, interesting contrasts in the differences between not just how they're singing, but also, I think this is a point that we've really touched upon, the ways in which the group was part of, I think, a much bigger kind of label machine coming out of the 60s model of Motown and Stax and Volt wasn't all that different, as opposed to some of the more creative freedoms that they might have enjoyed working with White on Flowers and on Rejoice. And I think there's just really interesting contrast being made there. But really, it just comes also back to those Stax Volt albums had some great, great material on there. And it has one of my all-time Stax Volt songs by any group, any artist, which is Blind Alley. Ernest?
There's so many things that immediately pop to mind, but I think I'm going to be, and I have something written down, but I'm going to go back to, I'm going to stick with it, even though it makes me sound even lazier than Oliver. I'm going to piggyback on what Oliver said and recommend the compilation that he suggested. And I would say to really check out the track Show Me, which was a huge hit. Was played on the radio throughout the 70s, and it's one of those that you sort of realize, you know, oh, I know this group, right?
You know I want you, how bad I need you, I want to kiss you, right now.
But I would also recommend that anyone who hasn't seen Watt Stax, check out Watt Stax. Mm-hmm. And there are so many phenomenal live performances by so many artists. And yet, the Emotions almost steal the movie with Peace Be Still. And I think it really gives you a sense of their foundation and just what vocal powerhouses they are and what they can do live, you know, without any sort of, you know, studio wizardry, just their voices. It's phenomenal. So I would say check out Oliver's recommendations and then hit up YouTube and check out Peace Be Still.
I definitely would echo that, and I would say to check out Watt Stax, the film, because going back to Oliver's earlier point, you get a visual sense of the context for Los Angeles. You get to, you know, it's not just a concert movie.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You know, there you get to see Los Angeles at that time, post Watts Rebellion, you know, people gathering at the forum, right? I think it's absolutely valuable for the kind of record it is, for the context of the music, but also that place and time. Right. I would also say to listen to Flowers.
Yeah,
I think there's some really interesting DNA in the structure of that album that you could trace to Solange's A Seat at the Table.
Oh,
mm. Only in how there's interstitial moments of harmony in between tracks that are listed as tracks. They're not skits. But I'm really interested in how they use their voices to kind of thread these songs together. And the way that album is structured, it's really good.
We go through changes. Changes we go through. We go through changes. Changes we go through.
I'm going to cheat and give one more recommendation just based off something that Tisa said earlier. You know, we've been talking about girl groups and groups that sort of make you hesitate to use that term.
Yeah.
But I would recommend also checking out Love Unlimited if you're not familiar with them.
Yeah.
You know, amazing harmonies, great songwriting, and Barry White's production is just top notch. So you know, you can see where you would fall on the battle between Love Unlimited and Emotions. But yeah, check out Love Unlimited as well for another really great, great girl group.
And if I may recommend a song by them, which is If You Want Me, Say It, which I forget which, I can see the album cover, I forget which LP title it is, but it's one of my favorite songs by them.
That'll do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, Tisa Bryant. Tisa, what are you working on now, and where can people find you?
You can find me at school.
Shout out to CalArts.
Shout out to CalArts. I'm teaching a class called Conjurations. It's a lab for new writing, and it's
great title.
Really fantastic. I am working on a book-length meditation on grief, longing, and desire in archival research. That parts of it will be getting published soon. I don't want to say where yet. But I do have work online. If you just Google Tisa Bryant, you'll find some recent work. I am working on an essay, actually, for this great book that's coming out on the 40-year history of the Black Doll Show at the William Grant Still Center here in Los Angeles in the West Adams area. So there's something about listening to this album and Black Dolls and social justice that's happening here. So when it happens, you'll know. I'll get it out there. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming through today.
Thanks for having me here. This has been fantastic.
Yeah. You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and our guest co-host, Ernest Hardy, sitting in for Morgan Rhodes. Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup. Heat Rocks is produced by myself, Morgan, and Christian Duenas, who also engineers, edits, and books for the show. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and executive producer is Jesse Thorne. We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Heat Rocks Pod. You can find a link to our Facebook group on our webpage, heatrockspod.com. That's where we'll post show notes for every episode, including a track listing of everything you've heard today and more goodies. Again, that's at heatrockspod.com.
As we ask every week, if you haven't had a chance to leave a review for us on iTunes, it is a big, big way in which new listeners can find their way to our humble little show. So if you can just take out a minute and leave us a review, please do so.
Hey, it's producer Christian. Just wanted to quickly jump in and give you guys a tease to next week's episode. Musician and writer Saul Williams comes down to the studio to talk to us about Portishead's Dummy.
The thing that also tripped me out about Portishead is that it was the first time, like I said, it's right before I start making music, and I remember being blown away by the fact that their engineer was a part of their group, Jeff Barrows. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I mean, like, we usually like, well, you know, so-and-so mixed this album, so-and-so mixed this album. But the person who mixed their album, their engineer, is a member of the group.
Which is fundamental to the sound of it. I mean, that's kind of an obvious point here, but it really it matters in this case.
It matters.
Yeah.
And it's not every album. It's actually a rarity for albums.
Absolutely.
It's a rarity.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the first time I had ever heard of that. And that's the first time I ever thought about album engineering.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.